We got a letter from our friend Charity Cox. Remember Elmer Cox and the family? Charity, we helped her through the summer when she was at the Camp Joy. Is that the place? And our missionary to South America, the Moors, their son Nathan was there. I asked her about it, and she remembered him. They didn't have much interaction, but she did remember him. She writes, I don't want to read it to you, it's a three-page letter, but she kind of details what she's going through at school, and my wife is taking the computer class about building a website, and Charity is in that class. She says, I have a new computer class this semester. At the moment, we're learning to set up websites. I'm always excited to learn more on the mechanics of computer work. And whether I'm excited or not, my family is. They all depend on me to solve all computer problems at the Cox household. So you know how that goes. Oh, you've been taking a college class with us. So taking a new class on leadership. And the textbook has a picture of Stonewall Jackson. She says, my dad is very anxious to read my textbook. Okay, he loves everything with history and so on. She says that she and her sister Julie, because she graduates this year, and she said, I've been giving considerable thought to my immediate plans after graduation. I have not had any offers by any Ivy League situation, but I do have an Ivy League idea that my sister and I are working on. Because of all the traveling my family has done, we've seen a tremendous need for music for the small church, end quote, or for the limited group or situation. I love to perform music, but perhaps my equal forte and love in music is composition and arranging. Over the years, my mom and I have arranged choir numbers, children's numbers, string choir numbers, ladies' numbers, men's numbers, and the list goes on. We have worked in many small churches, found a way to produce a quality program with very little talent and very little money. We have enjoyed the challenge. My sister and I believe we can market the work for many years and add to it and thereby be a blessing to many. That'll be an interesting thing to and one for us to pray about. She still has to pay off her debt at Maranatha College. And so she's asking prayer for that. So it summarizes, and I had to tell you all these things because it wouldn't have made any sense, but she says, please pray for me as I try to bounce all my balls. So sounds like juggling all the things she has to do. She also asked prayer for the widow lady that she's staying with, Etta Richardson. She said she has so generously and sacrificially opened her home to me. Most of you know that no matter how much you may like another person, it is not easy to be invaded. She has been so good to me. Please pray for her needs. She is a widow. This is your collegiate correspondent signing off. Until next time, hope that you're finding God as faithful in your life as I am in mine. So, thought you'd want to hear from our collegiate correspondent. A little embarrassing to talk about sex at church, but it's one of those things that God did, you know, God made it. And so we come to the last of our marriage seminar lessons, probably with Brother Jeb planning the next series on the minor prophets, and yet having the surgery on Friday. Well, I think I'm going to bring one or two other lessons. Some of you might remember some years ago we presented 10 ways that a husband can destroy the spirit of a marriage without even knowing he's doing it. And then the other one was how a wife may do that same thing. So I found these to be very insightful. I didn't make it up, but found it. It was helpful to me. And so I think we'll try to present those two. I might be able to get it all done in one lesson, but we'll just wait and see. So we'll give Jeb 1 or 2 weeks to for his nose to heal, come all wrapped up, white bandages. So lesson 11, session 4, the ultimate. The objective is to achieve a proper balance between fostering pleasure and fostering godliness. The scriptural key, 1 Corinthians 7:4, the wife hath not power, authority of her own body, but the husband. And likewise also the husband hath not authority of his own body, but the wife. We looked at perils to avoid last time. Now we look at purposes to achieve in the sexual relationship. And first would be rejoice in sexual freedom. Proverbs 5:18 says, "Let thy fountain be blessed and rejoice with the wife of thy youth." Somebody mentioned the movie called The Vow, and the story is that last night at the Sweetheart Fellowship, the story is a woman has an accident. She loses memory of who her husband is, and I mentioned that, what's her name? Funny woman, lady comedian, said, I had asked my wife last night, and she's not here to tell me who that is. The one that always had the husband Fang, Phyllis Diller. Phyllis Diller said the vow is about a woman who forgets why she got married. It's the story of every married woman in the United States, or in the world, or something. And so you know, it's just such a poor idea of what marriage is all about. Scripture's concept, God's concept for us, is to rejoice. Rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Here are the two people rejoicing, not only with each other, but in each other, you see. So four things here. Approach the one flesh relationship with anticipation of joy. We're going to be making some distinctions here. This is not exactly that lust for self-gratification, but for anticipation of joy. Number two, prepare for the relationship in mind, spirit, and body. Because if you are one flesh with this person, you also can share a spiritual relationship and a mental relationship. Number three, recognize the difference in men and women in arousing interest and excitement. Men are generally very quickly aroused, and again, a lady comedian was talking about her husband that was always interested in having a physical relationship real quickly, and she says, yet he's the first one to tell me that you can't race the engine of a cold car, you know. And so she was just pointing out the differences between men and women in the way they are aroused of interest and excitement. Number four, have enough knowledge of anatomy to know how to properly stimulate one another. I thought it was interesting that the Song of Solomon actually pictures that love relationship, and to the extent that it's talking about the physical relationship, I found six practices that help to prepare for physical relationship. One I noticed was kisses. And kissing is, you know, when I was working as a youth pastor, I was telling the kids about, you know, keeping your distance with the opposite sex. And the thing that you hear, the mocking attitude is, oh yeah, if you kiss them, then you have to marry them because they have a baby, you know. And I said, well, you know, there is touching and then there's touching. And there's kissing and then there's kissing. A goodnight kiss on the porch as you say goodnight, that might be one thing, but you know, in the loneliness of a car and the dark of night and kissing upon kissing, you're actually starting the process to sexual relationship. And how far do you take that before you say stop? And how far will you go before you won't be able to say stop? That neither of you want to stop. And then you end into sin, never intending to do that. So, you know, put the brakes on early. just don't do these things. But once you're married and God wants you to rejoice with the wife of your youth, Then Solomon, Song of Solomon 1:2, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. More than one kiss there, you see. For thy love is sweeter than wine. Then pleasant smell, something that guys sometimes forget. Aftershave, perfume, deodorant, shower, scented candles, potpourri. 1:3, because the savor of thy good ointments, because of the savor, thy name is as an ointment poured forth, therefore do the virgins love thee. The whole idea of ointments ointments would be the oils usually that they put on their body that had a nice smell. Then hugging. A bundle of myrrh is my well-beloved unto me. He shall lie all night betwixt my breasts. That is a very close and embracing situation. For the husband embracing with his hand, manual stimulation. We see his left hand is under my head, his right hand doth embrace me. His left hand should be under my head, his right hand should embrace me. So we begin to see that this was one of the things that in this godly relationship that is dealt with. And then we find in Proverbs, Solomon also wrote, let her be as the loving hind and pleasant roe, let her breasts satisfy thee at all times, be thou ravished always with her love. The word ravished is a synonym for the word rape, but here the man is being overwhelmed, being completely subdued with her love. And so the loving caress with the hand. And then loving words of beauty. And we have to laugh at this because the attitude of beauty changes. Brother Jeb was telling me that when blue-eyed blondes first came to Japan, I think it was, they said, ew, they have eyes like the cats. And the hair was like what? Grass. Yeah, like dead grass, you know. And everybody with dark eyes and black hair—that was beauty was somewhere in that realm, and something very, very odd. I don't know if you've ever seen the great beauties of the past, and these ladies always were pretty full-bodied, you know, and so on. And I always thought it was funny when they talk. The older literature talks about how when she stepped, into the carriage or something, that they glimpsed her ankle and began to swoon, you know. So the whole idea is that it's a cultural thing about beauty. So here, loving words, speaking of her beauty, and I think it would work the other way around. A guy doesn't especially want to be thought of as beautiful, but words of admiration. Behold, thou art fair, my love. Behold, thou art fair. Thou hast dove's eyes within thy locks. Thy hair is as a flock of goats that appear from Mount Gilead. Imagine that, the goats flowing down the hill. Thy teeth are like the flock of sheep that are even shorn, which came up from the washing, whereof every one bear twins, and none is barren among them. You have all your teeth. Perhaps not a thing to be expected in those days. Thy lips are like a thread of scarlet. Thy speech is comely. I love to listen to your voice. The temples are like a piece of pomegranate within thy locks. It must be a reddish look to her face. Thy neck is like the Tower of David builded for an armory, whereon there hang 1,000 bucklers, all shields of mighty men. That sounds like a necklace to me, some sort of necklace decoration. And this was impressive to him, and so that's what he thought of when he saw her long neck decorated with some sort of a necklace. Thy two breasts are like two young roes that are twins, which feed among the lilies. Until the day break and the shadows flee away, I will get me to the mountain of myrrh, to the hill of frankincense. Again, references to beautiful smells. Thou art all fair, my love, there is no spot in thee. And so this is not what the world thinks of as, you know, ripping people's clothes off and jumping into bed and just jump into passion before you, and, you know, and by the way, what's your name, you know. This is not God's way at all. In fact, the situation here is this is the loving embrace that gets deeper and deeper. So that was number four. Have enough knowledge of anatomy, know how to properly stimulate one another. Then number five, plan to take enough time. And what I have read, 10 to 30 minutes preparatory stimulation. Now, you're not just talking here about physical stimulation, but the whole mental, the whole emotional, the whole spiritual gathering together. It's a beautiful, lovely time to share that most biblical intimacy. Then complete the act as a godly and infinitely personal act of love. This isn't just a physical exercise. This isn't just, you know, blowing your nose. This is pure loving intimacy. And then demonstrate love after the climax of the relationship. You know, okay, we got that done, and flip over and go to sleep, you know. This is still a matter of love. My wife and I like to cuddle. And you don't have to, you know, spend a lot of time talking necessarily, but just enjoying each other's company in that special time. All right, so we see that A is rejoice in sexual freedom. And God is no stranger to this, you see. God invented this, God planned it, and tells us that we should be involved in rejoicing. The second thing then we want to emphasize to balance this out is to rejoice in sanctified fulfillment. If you recognize this, husbands and wives, your mate knows that you could have a sexual relationship with any other person, you see. What you want to emphasize to them is that they are the only person in all the world that can satisfy your physical needs without sin and guilt. That this is the person that God has given you, you see. This is the one exception to the idea, do not commit sexual relationships with anyone, except for this one person. And so this is the only place where you can have the physical relationship without sin, without guilt. Number two, the attitude of the one flesh relationship is entirely selfless. How different is that from the world's thought? That sex is all about self and enjoying yourself, sometimes at the expense of this. There's crude language where the sexual relationship is referred to when you talk about somebody that took advantage of somebody in a business deal. You see? Well, what that means is that the selfish person did this to that other person and got off in the pleasure of it, but left them, you know, hurt and bleeding. And this is generally a concept of sex in the world. But for the Christian, it must be entirely selfless. You say, how in the world could the sexual relationship be selfless? Well, think of it this way. We are not to consider our performance. You know, how was that for you? We hear on the worldly media. While we are to enjoy the physical relationship, we talked about that earlier, We are to do that. We are not to be concerned with self-gratification. Remember, we've been talking about love all this way, and that love is the opposite of selfishness. Selfishness says, I want this for myself. Love says, I want this for you. And so the focus that we have here is that even the sexual relationship needs to be completely other-dominated. We are not to be concerned with self-gratification. Going back to our theme verse, 1 Corinthians 7:4, the wife hath not power or authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise also the husband hath not power or authority over his own body, but the wife. I want you to think about that for a minute. You always hear the worldly way of doing things is that the wife says, unless you do what I want, you're out of my bed tonight, you see. You're on the couch tonight. Christian way of looking at this is that sexual relationship is not to be determined by you. You don't have the authority over your own body in this sexual relationship. Now, before you start focusing on the negative of that, recognize that the positive is that you have authority over the mate's body. Now, power or authority implies responsibility. See, if I say to Marshall, I saw that wastebasket over there and it hasn't been emptied. And he says, well, I'll be glad to do it for you, but it's not really my responsibility. See, so if it's not his responsibility, he didn't feel like he had the authority to go emptying wastebaskets, you see. So it's not his fault. It's not his authority, so it's not his responsibility. If your body is not your authority, it's not your responsibility. But your partner's body is your authority, and your partner's body is your responsibility in the sexual relationship, which is exactly what is the context of 1 Corinthians 7:4. So the idea then is that, and this whole idea that we were talking about earlier, knowing how to stimulate. I was just listening to the radio, a lady, a violinist, has recently acquired a second Stradivarius. And this is the ultimate in violins. And these are worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so she has two of them, and they have a different sound. She characterizes one, they have these ancient names. One of them was owned by Napoleon for a while and so on. And but, you know, for hundreds of years, since the 1600s, 1700s, when they were made by Stradivari in Italy, almost had the town there, Italian city where they did those, wonderful center of music. But anyway, she says they have a different sound. One is a little more masculine, one's a little more feminine. Like a little sterner sound, a little more gentle sound, and so on. And so she played somebody's violin duet with herself, and she did that. Started out with the English orchestra, and she's playing the one violin, that one part, and then leaving the rest of it undone. Then sometime later, she went to New York, and now she's wearing headphones, listening to the recording that she made, that they made for her, and she's playing the other violin, so she's playing both parts. And I say all that to say, you think about how intimate. She thinks of these violins as living things. She calls the one Molly, because it's a larger name, Malabernum or something, violin. So she has names for them. She thinks of them. She feels like if she practices with one of them, the other gets jealous. You know, it's just kind of a funny way of thinking about this thing. But if your mate's sexual relationship, if her body is his body, is your responsibility, then you need to learn how to handle that body. You need to know how to make beautiful music on that instrument. That's your responsibility. It's your authority given by God, and so it's your responsibility, you see? Not mine about me, or her about her, but me about her. So I need to play the instrument God has given me with as much dignity and grace and loving kindness and beauty as I can summon. So number three, lose yourself in giving completely to your mate. That was my experience when we were first married, that there was the excitement and all of this. Neither of us had ever had a sexual relationship before or since, just that one, just us. And the thing is that what I found was that, from junior high on, the boys would, hardly talk about anything else. And the idea was it was going to be this great thing for us. And what I found was is that I lost myself in it, that it wasn't about me. That the love experience was ravishing. It was overwhelming. So lose yourself in giving completely to your mate. Number four, find satisfaction in bringing your partner to a state of physical excitement. See? Well, that's not so exciting for me. That's not your responsibility. It's not your authority. Find the satisfaction, that virtuosic satisfaction in bringing your partner to the state of physical excitement. And then finally, aim for the goal of achieving ultimate oneness and intimacy in the one flesh relationship. So an entirely giving thing. This is how to rejoice in your wife and your husband in a sanctified fulfillment. All right, sort of a delicate thing we're dealing with, and we don't have any children here that we'd have to dismiss, so comments or questions then.